Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual in the studios of CBS Interactive, Fleischmann Hillard's VP of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hi, Tim.
And returning to the podcast today, former Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hi, Tim.
Who now has a proper job at PR agency Launch. This week, advertising and the Ashes, News Limited's big changes, Aussie advertising bigwig Sean Cummins returns, the Australian Press Council seeks to regulate serious bloggers, Seven is named Network of the Year, and we wrap up this year's TV ratings. So first we talk to Camille, friend of the podcast, longtime voice of the podcast. You know, just the other day, someone said to me, what happened to that chick who used to be on your podcast?
That chick, that's a compliment. What did you say, Tim?
I said, I would make up something mean that I said, but I didn't.
Something clever, you mean?
Clever, that would be it, yeah.
Witty and clever.
Yes, which is clearly beyond me.
this morning.
Yeah, so obviously what... it's going to be interesting because it's going to be a different dynamic. Because the dynamic when it was the three of us doing it before was Scott would say something about when he used to be a journalist, and then Camille would tease him about how he used to be a journalist and now worked in PR.
Well, no, I wouldn't tease him about it. I would tease him at the fact that he couldn't stop talking about how he used to be a journalist and now is very successful in PR.
Thank you very much.
So how does it feel to be in PR?
It's great. I can't say I've lost any sleep about leaving journalism. Interesting. It's a relatively smooth transition, given, again, as Scott will know and has told us several times, that, you know, the experience from journalism does help in understanding the media machine.
How long has it been since?
It's been 6 months. 6 months ago I was a journalist.
Yeah. 6 months.
Isn't that crazy?
It's
still
yesterday.
2010. I've had two careers in 1 year.
Yeah. Do you know what? The thing that, for me, that I think will probably stop me from ever working PR is having to be nice to journalists, even if they don't deserve it. How are you finding that?
You don't have to always be nice to them.
No,
yeah,
but sometimes you do, don't you? It's a dance, you know. It's a bit of diplomacy and tact, but quite frankly, you need that as a journalist as well when you're dealing with contacts, whether it be the head of a company, you know, an arrogant twat, you know, and you want to get the story out of them, or any contact at all. It's just relationships. That's communications.
So which contacts are you glad you don't have to deal with anymore?
I'm not going to name them right now.
Editor Tim Burrows.
That's a response over a beer at the pub down the road after this.
So you're so well media trained now. So tell us about the sort of clients that you work with, sort of things, if you're allowed to, that you've been working
with.
Yeah,
sure. Well, the main client that I work for is the AER Foundation, the Alcohol Education and Rehabilitation Foundation.
And this is funded by who?
It's a not-for-profit body, actually, originally funded by the government, and now it's been running for almost 10 years. So it's an advocacy body for responsible drinking. And over the years, it's invested about over $115 million in rehabilitation and treatment programs, research.
Did you just dodge a question?
What?
When I said, who's it funded by? So it used to be funded by the government.
Well, it's no longer funded by the government.
What, do Magic Pixies give it its money?
It's called a foundation, AER Foundation, Tim.
So does the alcohol industry fund it?
No, it doesn't. It's not funded by the alcohol industry. And it's basically advocating responsible drinking.
So what sort of messages have you been involved in getting out there then?
Well, I suppose the one thing I'm working on at the moment is, as I was saying, it's all about putting the message out there, drinking responsibly during the festive season, for example, or it puts out a big annual report talking about issues around alcohol misuse. So we're actually involved with the clients on looking at the research questions, redrafting some new questions, then us liaising with the research firm, talking to them about the best way to broach these issues. Getting the report back from the research firm, you know, looking at the potential media angles or the themes, coming up with a strategy as to what kind of messages we can pull out of it, and then working with the client and how to deliver that. So again, as I was saying, they're big lobbyists. So if they had a politician who supported their cause, a particular cause, say restricting pubs trading hours and or advertising restrictions, we'd work with them perhaps, or a health body, to put the message out there and use that as a platform together for a bit of a stronger voice, those kinds of things. So you obviously, everything from a press release to kind of strategizing how you would put the message out there in terms of the main policy platforms that they advocate.
And what else for Launch? What's 2011 looking like?
Well, one of the exciting things that we're doing, working on, is TEDx, actually. So in terms of the
now, isn't that ironic? Because I seem to remember you couldn't even get a ticket last year.
Well, I actually wasn't in town. Right. I didn't actually apply for it.
Yeah, I got a ticket. Did you get a ticket?
I got a ticket, yeah.
Oh, surprise, surprise, boys. Can I just rewind the clock here to the conversation about the two boys here bitching and moaning about how wanky it was? The process of getting a ticket.
I ever did.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, maybe I did.
Oh yeah, we both did.
No, I remember.
And then when you got the approval and you got a ticket, you were happily boasting about it on air.
You missed the word. It's gloating.
You're gloating.
Oh, gloating and boasting. Yeah.
Yes. So, you're
Does that mean we're on the list for next year?
I think we've just blown it.
Yeah, thanks as well.
Bye-bye.
TEDx next year.
Well, it's returning in May.
So, firstly, for people who don't know TEDx, it's worth explaining what it is.
Basically, it started about 20 years ago in Long Beach, and it's basically about ideas.
So, TED stands for, is it technology, entertainment, design? Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Technology, entertainment, design, talking about ideas worth spreading, basically. So, bringing together thinkers and industry leaders, you know, trying to inspire people to discuss new ideas.
Last year was one of the best events I went to last year.
Yeah, it was actually. Yeah, there was some hit and miss stuff.
Yeah,
but most of it was really good.
But it was well run.
Yep, very
well
run.
Even the misses weren't misses by that much.
Yep.
And yeah, lots of good, interesting people and good conversations as well. Yeah, that you sort of had with people.
Really interesting.
So you had the Y&R Brands, Nigel Marsh, Google's Lars Rasmussen, and Michael Kirby, the former High Court judge, which, as you'll remember, got a bit of mainstream press for his comments about Channel 7.
Yes, he sort of suggested that 7 were, I think, serial homophobes.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, I remember you bolting off to go write that story.
I did. I put the story straight up, yeah.
No, it was good. It was really... there was also, I can't remember the woman's name, which is pretty bad of me, who spoke about the sharing contingent where...
Yes, this sort of the collaboration culture, this idea of, you know, car shares or whatever.
I thought that was a really, really interesting talk.
Yes. So what is Launch's involvement?
So we're just involved in the communications. So, for example, what I'm doing now, we haven't actually divulged much information for 2011's event, so I'm happy to share some.
Yes, what can you tell us so far?
Some tidbits for you.
Is Tim going to be a speaker?
You'd have to apply. Well, speaking of speakers, there's about 20 spots. 9 have been hopefully locked in before the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. However, there are some more spots, guys, but you do have to be inspiring, so maybe think
together
about that one.
Inspiring. I don't know, apart.
You can actually just jump on the website to apply for that, and it's tedxsydney.com. And the ones that have been locked in, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, some internationally recognised Australian names. Can't reveal the detail just yet, but watch this space.
Internationally recognised Australian names.
Jason Donovan?
Well, fingers crossed on that one.
So these are people who have excelled in other parts of the world but will become home for TEDx.
Well, who are active as well everywhere, basically. So I can't really divulge any
Rupert
more than
Murdoch?
That.
Rupert Murdoch? Oh, no, he's an American now, isn't he? Gave up his Australian citizenship.
On the sponsorship front, there are a couple of two new sponsors that we will be naming soon as well.
Yeah. Who are the sponsors on board so far?
Well, returning sponsors are the likes of ABC and UTS. And, you know, it's they're all more partners to the cause.
I seem to remember last year, was it Publicis Mojo? Was that the ad agency involved? And is it them again this year?
No, well, actually, this year it's a little bit different. There's a bit of a new element to it. So you'll be familiar, Tim, because you wrote about Will O'Rourke, the guys from The Chaser who launched that production company.
It sounds like the name of a person, but it's the name of a I don't know whether to call it a production house or...
It's a production house. Yes. That's what they're positioning themselves as. So, you know, working with ad agencies and in this instance, you know, coming up with some creative ideas, creative executions with a brief. So what they're going to be doing is they're going to be doing some video content, some promo content in the lead up to TEDx.
Now, Julian Morrow was involved last year as well, obviously.
Yeah, he's also involved this year in the forum. So he's continuing his association with that. Mm. And... there's also going to be a creative call-out. This is separate now. This is probably more for ad agencies as well as the public, but this is more for ad agencies. We're inviting people to submit some content other than the traditional speaker idea. So videos of any kind which fits the TEDx brief. So original, ideas-based, inspiring, thought-provoking. So basically it's a way of getting into TEDx if you can't get a speaking gig.
And same venue again?
Okay.
Yeah, same venue again, yeah. Carriage Works.
And it's from,
it was 650 last year, this year, it's going to be about 800 in 2011. Mm. So watch the space, and obviously live streaming, and there's just a lot more news to come out of that as well.
Cool. Well, that's a good little summary of what Camille's been up to. Anything else you want to fill us in on your life in the last 6 months?
Not live on air now. Huh?
Well, in that case, we push on. Next, we're talking cricket. So even with the Ashes now well underway, the cricket ads, or the good cricket ads, are disappointingly thin on the ground. I did quite like this Combank one.
Saturday morning. The kids have talent. And with the new gear from the Commonwealth Bank, they can prove it. The championship is on the line. The final batsman stands. He stares down his Indian rival. Make that his English nemesis. Then digs in for the biggest moment of his career. All kids deserve their dreams. And with the Commonwealth Bank's grassroots grants, they can play like their heroes and create memories to last a lifetime. But all the fame in the world won't get him out of cleaning his room.
So that was the latest work from Goodby Silverstein for Commonwealth Bank of Australia with a bit of a cricket theme to it. Fortunately, there was a commentary, so you probably got most of it. Camille, seen any good cricket ads this year yet?
Tim, you lost me at cricket. No, they've always been boring. They're still boring, and it's just boring. I have nothing else to add. Really.
Hey, look, I'm Scottish, therefore cricket and the Scots are not really friends. In fact, I think I know of three cricket pitches where I come from in the whole country. It's pretty much played by English kids who are visiting Scotland or at public schools in Scotland. Public in Scotland's private. That's kind of a weird one. Cricket, dullest sport in the world. God, it's so boring.
To me, the Ashes in Australia is like Christmas, only it lasts 6 weeks.
See, somebody said to me the other day, I love cricket because I can just sit on the sofa with a beer and I can nod off and fall asleep to the voice of the cricket. And I thought, doesn't that just defy the point of a sport?
No, entirely not. One of the best things in the whole world, and this is very much diverging from the subject, which is why I saw Camille looking at her watch. One of the best things about cricket is you go along to one day of the test and you can just sit there and you've got the rhythm of the game going past, you've got a beer in your hand. You know, if you miss a ball, it doesn't matter too much.
And it's
maybe that should be an ad, Tim.
Yeah, and I watched all those cricket ads that you put up on the website.
Well, one I then put up later, which I would put to you as being quite good, was the which I'd forgotten about at the time was the Vodafone one.
Yep, where with Granny.
And they're doing that nice thing of, and I'm not sure it's necessarily real, but this idea of we've had all of these questions come in for the team. Yeah. You know, Fred from Queensland says, you know, my mum could bowl out Watson or whatever.
My grandma,
let's try it.
Yeah. So, look, that was okay. I don't mind that one.
And that's got a lot of behind it, that campaign. Yeah. Loads of different executions. They had the kids having the practice cricket match beforehand.
The Milo flash mob just
cringeworthy.
Oh, absolutely cringe. I made me want to vomit, to be honest. Really, I thought.
Vomit up Milo?
Yeah. Oh, I can't stand Milo anyway, but that doesn't make a difference. But I was really disappointed in that. I thought, you know, flash mobs again. I thought they were like, weren't they 2008 or something?
And I think really the first podcast done. I did was we talked about a flash mob.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't understand the point of them anymore, especially one like that, which, let's be honest here, most of the people that I've ever seen or ever talked to who like cricket are men. So to have like 100 women at a cricket match all there, surely all the people around them must have went, that's a bit sus.
Well, it was.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I was watching the video clip, actually. Yeah. But hey, who cares? They're probably just perving at them.
Well,
so.
This is true.
Well, next we talk about News Limited taking its creativity in-house. So News Limited is going to kick off the new year by opening what effectively, I guess it could be described as an in-house ad agency, led by Joe Talcott, who up until now has led marketing News Limited. And what we've also seen as a result of that is Ed Smith, who is or has been COO at News Digital Media.
CEO?
No, COO. Chief Operating Officer. Yeah, so his focus up to now has been on... what are you pointing at? Have you found a mistake?
I found a mistake in your article from Umbrella then.
Go on then, show me. I'm looking on the iPad.
Readers think it's endearing now.
No, we're both right.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, no, he was COO. chief operating officer, but then he became CEO of the
Could
content
save.
And commercial
We're both right.
thing. If you scroll down further, see, that's the problem with the iPad. You can't get the whole story on
I
the one page
I do that.
Like this handy piece
oh, no,
of
there
paper.
You go. There's the whole story.
It then explains his changes of roles. Anyway, two important things here, as far as I can see it. Number one, we've got news trying to do this kind of integrated creative offering. Number two, we've got someone who's clearly becoming a rising star at News Limited. Camille, your thoughts?
Look, in terms of this in-house creative, I think it's almost inevitable in that the UK publishers have been doing this for a while, some to a greater degree than others. But it's nothing new, and I think it's a good idea. I think that perhaps that ad agencies, they'll be competing against ad agencies and pitching for briefs against ad agencies. And potentially the incumbents for advertisers might be feeling a little bit defensive if
yeah,
they come in.
Yeah, a couple of points on that, because I did have a chat to Joe Talcott
mm-hmm,
after it was announced. Yeah, no, the opposite, actually. Firstly, you know, he's completely open to the fact that even here in Australia, you've got PBL are doing Powered, you've got Fairfax 360, you've got SMG Red from the Seven Network, all doing these integrated offerings. He would say that the first point of difference is this won't be a sales-led offering.
Yeah.
It'll be a creative offering that doesn't report into the sales team.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the...
Because they don't talk.
Well, they do, well, you know, they're a fearsome operation. Whatever you say about them, right. they sell ads. So no, I would argue that's not a fair observation. Second point, though, on competing with advertising agencies. Again, I think they would make the argument that you know they'd be complementary, but of course they would have to say that because they don't want them to feel threatened.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're hoping to get Joe on a future podcast.
Well, I would argue that, yes, we're not sales-led, we're creative ideas-led. I would say, first of all, they need all of the help they can get commercially, and that there's nothing wrong with sales, editorial, and marketing sometimes working together. It doesn't mean you can't come up with a compelling brand that the relevant audience would want to read about or
going to
a branded event or a supplement. So what if it's sales-led? Well, I would say collaborative rather than sales-led.
Mm. To me, what about the move of a sort of different direction for the marketing of news? So Joe Talcott, his style is very much, you know, agency and, you know, classic old school McDonald's marketer. You know, he headed up sort of globally the marketing of McDonald's. And we're now seeing Ed Smith coming in with a kind of different style.
Yeah, it's interesting. Have you actually spoken to Ed Smith before, Tim?
Before, yes. Not over this. But yeah, I remember actually when I was doing the B&T Awards judging back in my B&T days, he was on one of the juries and was very impressive. He was the one who arrived the most organised, the best briefed, got out this giant kind of spreadsheet where he'd worked out the scoring beforehand. A kind of impressive character. But to me, and I'm just looking for the quote from News Limited, because to me this is the really potentially interesting thing that gives the clues on what his job is going to be. So this is the comment from...
Ed Smith.
Yes, yeah, so this is the comment from John Hardigan about Ed Smith, in which it says, this is the direct quote, to realise the opportunity, this is where we're going, we must excel at acquiring, retaining and servicing customers through numerous channels and develop print and digital products that meet and exceed our customers' needs and expectations. Now, a lot of this is going to be about customer acquisition. And they made a hiring not that long ago from Virgin Mobile as well, which was someone from a sort of similar marketing role as well. And it's starting to look a bit like they're treating customers like a telco would. You're going to have lots of different offers, lots of different packages. You're going to have to really understand who your consumers are, what the price point is. It's going to be CRM.
So a lot of direct marketing, in other words, which is what News Limited or News Corp in the UK is really good at in the Times division. Is it Katie Vanek? I'm not sure if you're familiar
yes.
with her.
Yes, I am. Yes, I must confess, I always found her a little cold on the occasions I had to deal with her, but perhaps that was just me.
Okay, personal opinion aside, I think that she was quite successful in the DM front.
I'm sure she was.
Pushing it forward. And so I'm not surprised that News Limited here would potentially be going down that area as well.
Scott.
Yeah.
That was thoughtful.
Look... I think it's the strategy needs to be in place at the moment. I think they need to do it. And, you know, I think, like you said, Camille, following on from the UK, it's the logical thing to do. But I'll wait to see how it pans out, to be honest.
Next, Sean Cummins returns. So, one of the bigger characters in the world of advertising.
That was a very foreboding turn, Jim.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sean Cummins is back to Adland. It's a new business. It's called Cummins Ross. There are actually a whole bunch of partners. There are...
millions of them.
Well, there's Sean Cummins, there's Jason Ross, and then there are six other partners, which someone pointed out that they couldn't call the agency Cummins Ross and Partners because of the whole initials problem then.
I was there.
So, what do you think of Sean Cummins?
I've never met him personally, but I think that the
You're
idea...
Kidding.
No, I've spoken to him several times over the phone, but I think more anecdotes and stories precede him. I think the idea is good. You've got someone from Wonderman, DM. If an agency can get DM, as we just spoke about that, I think a lot of DM agencies came out better during the GFC, for example, more immediate return on investment, which clients love. And then you have someone from Mindshare, so the media brains, and obviously Sapient Nitro, the best job in the world agency. So with their powers combined, there is potential.
And
well,
the
best job in the world. Hold on. Let's just stop a second.
Can we not discuss?
We did this last...
I was at an event recently.
Yes.
And I was speaking at the City Bloggers Festival, and someone involved in that campaign said to me, oh... how do we get journalists to stop
writing about it?
That it wasn't successful because they've had a 2% drop in people attending in the islands. And I was a bit like, I said to her, well, didn't you think of that in the first place? You know, that you didn't have a contingency in place. You know, best job in the world, you won all these awards, but why, you know?
Yeah, but surely this is against the backdrop of a downturn. Well,
and I asked her, I said to this person, I said, did you look at some of your rivals and what they've dropped by? You know, that might give you an indication if they drop by 8%, you drop by 2%, you were successful. And, it was a bit bizarre to hear somebody ask that question.
So who, and this was somebody who...
Who was involved in the campaign.
Who was involved in the campaign from the client side,
I don't want to say that, I just want to say that...
Well, the reason for asking is, I remember having guest posting a few months back from somebody from client side who made the case and offered the metrics of its success. So, we may never know.
Mm. Mm. Sorry, on you go.
I'm done. It's your turn.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So the idea, a return to an integrated agency model.
Yeah. We've been saying that for how long now? You know, I think that it's going to go and it's going to become even more integrated. You know, I think that there's still areas missing in this at the moment in this new Cummins Ross. I think that we'll see more agencies like this either grow or more agencies like this just fuse into other agencies, and it's going to end up down the line where everybody's doing everything, I guess.
I'll tell you why I like this, though, and this is just a really selfish reason, is, you know, sometimes you get asked as a, and you're, I'm sure you used to be as well, Camille, you get asked by someone, oh, such and such, you know, are they any good or whatever? And the thing is, the filter you put things through as a journalist is, are they interesting, first of all?
Yeah.
And Sean Cummins, I mean, I think the reason I like him is because he never fails to be interesting. He has a view on everything. He does interesting things. You know,
great hair.
Very good.
Does he have executive hair?
Call up the story itself and you'll see the image is
it's a bit small. I tried to look, it was a bit small.
Special hair. But, you know, more to the point, he's got a view on everything. He's got a stance on everything. He stands for something, which is why some people don't like him and some people do. But he will always take a view on everything.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
And I think that's why it's going to be really interesting having them back in the market.
Yeah, I mean, I do love as well the quotes that you put in your story, Tim. You know, new advertising, this type of no-line thinking. And I love the agency jargon between above the line, below the line, through the line. I'm sure there should have been a diagonal line there somewhere. Now there's
like
no line.
Maneuver.
Just remove the line.
Speaking of
no
the
line.
Lines, did you... We haven't included this on the list, so I won't judge you any more harshly if you missed this one. Did you see MediaCom Gate this week, where they accidentally sent out
the tracked changes.
Rookie mistake there.
But the thing that amused me was that they had carefully crossed out above the line advertising and changed it in the press release to integrated advertising campaign.
Of course.
Not that
they should have said no line, just no line.
No line. There is no lines anymore.
Integrated was just so 2009.
Well, next we talk about regulation for bloggers. Now, the chairman of the Australian Press Council suggested that bloggers, serious bloggers, might want to join the Press Council. and partly he's talking about this this attempt to combat an internet-induced race to the bottom, with many experienced editors and journalists believe is threatening the standards and eventual viability of high-quality journalism.
Has he read the papers in Australia? I mean, come on. If he wants to start throwing mud at bloggers, he better start reading these the bloody papers in this country.
I'm sorry, Scott. The Sun newspaper?
Look, I'm not going to deny it. Okay?
Scott used to work for? Sorry, guys.
I'm not going to deny that, okay? I used to work at a tabloid. But let's just say that the quality of newspapers over here isn't great at times. Yeah, there's some good journalists out there, some good stories. But a lot of the time, you know, it's not the best. And that's, look, I'm not trying to do an attack.
Yeah, but don't forget that the Press Council's job isn't to regulate quality, it's to regulate ethical conduct.
Yes, well. Yeah, and what was it, the fake Pauline Hanson pictures that were pushed up in the...
Yeah, but again, they apologised.
Oh,
you know.
Oh, that was nice of them.
Yes,
great, well
but
done.
The point is, they were wrong, they got it wrong, they cocked up massively. I'm not sure you can point to that as an example where regulation has failed in some way, because you can't stop someone from cocking up. It's what you do about
you,
it when
they
do. You
should check your bloody facts and get them properly done before you write a story. I'm sorry, don't give me that whole line about how all they did. How many apologies drink appear in any newspaper, in SMH or in like a year? And where are they buried?
Page 2. You will normally find a couple of apologies on page 2 of the Herald most days.
Most
you'll
days.
Find them on, yeah, you'll find them. But hang on, is your problem that there aren't enough apologies? Or there
no,
too
I'm,
many
well,
apologies?
I'm saying that something I actually do believe in is that the apology should be the size of the article that was written about it.
Now, often, though, the problem is,
Well, I think, look, if you're going to write a big story and get the sales from that story, then likewise, you should be doing an apology if you screw up.
But what do you do? Because often...
The front page, get
yeah,
the front page.
But often the correction isn't
That's
about
realistic.
The central single right. one fact, is it, of the story. Often it's something peripheral to it.
Yeah.
So you're saying that if you get anything wrong in a 500-word story,
I'm saying the big stories that are wrong.
Yeah, but
like that one. It's
definitely.
Yeah, and they did. They apologised on the front page.
Yeah, that's how it should be done every time. But
so hang
always
on.
Ha-
you had a problem
on,
with it.
Hold on. It
this
doesn't always happen.
You
no, no.
Started
it doesn't
this
always
was,
happen. No,
this was your poster.
It doesn't always happen. No, that was just one thing. I
this
suggested.
Was your poster example no, of regulation not working.
Yes. All I'm saying is
it and it was the example
work.
You chose.
Okay, I'll try and remember some others then during this.
Okay.
Now, back to the bloggers.
And wait for Scott to remember some other examples.
Back to the bloggers.
Yes.
Number one is, well, there's probably, what, 4,000 or 5,000, maybe 6,000 bloggers in Australia. Over 10 readers, I suppose. For him to come out and say this, you know, come and join us, just seems a bit, at the moment, I don't really see the point of it, of actually joining them. I think that they're one organisation that aren't really in the modern age.
No, in fairness to the Press Council, new chairman has been there about a year. Yes, the website is an absolute joke.
Needs a bit of updating slightly.
And needs updating, and I'm sure it will be.
GeoCities or
something. Yeah, but well, that's the thing. You know, it looks ancient, but I think we kind of have to probably cut him a bit of slack because there's he arrived just as funds were cut as well. There is more funding next year. So I kind of think give them a little bit more time to get their act together yet as a Press Council.
Well, I'd like to know what they also define as a serious journal, a serious
blogger.
Well,
that's my main...
You know,
my main issue. Yeah. What is a serious?
In fairness, I don't forget that was a sort of passing reference in his review of the year. Was you know sure if it comes to the time when they are introducing people, then I'm sure that they'll define what is or isn't something that could be regulated. I must admit, with wearing my. I'm not sure I wear a blogger's hat as such.
Yeah, do you still get referred to as a blogger, don't you?
Yeah, from time to time. I don't have a problem with that. And I found myself thinking, oh, you know, on the one hand, you know, I still think of myself as a journalist who's come up through print training and probably applies or tries to apply the same standards.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I can say, yeah, you know, why not join it if it gives me a bit more credibility?
One thing I noticed is, like, the difference between, say, Mumbrella and... If you take a look at, like, Allure Media and their like, sites...
Which is a lot of the US stuff, like Gawker and all
yeah,
of those.
Yeah, they have Gawker and Kotaku and that kind of thing. One of the things, they have a tendency to write 3 pars and a link to another story. You know, they're more of a kind of conduit with occasional articles, whereas, you know, you're more of a serious, you actually write news stories constantly.
Yeah, and you know, maybe his definition of serious blogger is somebody who attempts to break stories. Now, I'm sure that Allure would say that some of what they do is, you know, let's not forget that, you know, that's the network that brought us the leaked iPhone, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, so they do break stories, but also the sort of stories that I suspect if you're regulated by a press council, you would immediately find yourself slapped for.
Yes.
So, what have we concluded? Are we in favour of this, or are we against it?
As you were saying, we need some further clear definition as to what a serious blogger is, for one.
Yeah.
And let's go from there.
Yeah, and then the reasons for them joining. Is there any reason for them actually to get, you know... Is that just, you just want a little badge on your website?
You need to also prove that they understand digital. You know, I know that you're saying that this really old website doesn't, you should cut them some slack.
Yeah. It's been here a year. It's not that hard to get a website built in.
You know, if you're
going to
be talking about digital, just practice what you preach and just show a little bit of that you actually get it.
Fair enough. Next, 7 TV Network of the Year.
And our final category is the Television Network of the Year. Of course, we're looking at not just the free-to-air television networks, but also pay TV, which is increasingly becoming a source for local content. For this category, we're looking at the engagement with the local industry, particularly in terms of drama production, the performers of the local productions, and their innovation, particularly when it comes to cross-platform initiatives and online initiatives. And the nominees are the ABC, the Movie Network, Network 10, and the 7 Network. And this year, the award is going to be to the network that turned Back to the Rafters into one of the most viewed television series in history. So that's the 7 Network, of course.
So that voice you heard was the dulcet tones of my colleague Miguel Gonzalez, announcing our sister title Encore's TV Network of the Year, which went for the 7 Network, which is a good excuse to talk about the TV ratings year generally, you know, with the likes of the triumph of MasterChef, few flops along the way as well. Cops LAC leaps to mind for in the drama front, if nothing else. What do you reckon, Camille? Does 7 deserve to be TV Network of the Year?
No, I was actually a bit perplexed by this. I know it won in the ratings in the share overall for the year, just ahead of 9, but biggest growth did go to 9, also in the key demographics, and in a good position for further growth next year by comparison, I would say. 7 did have the more flops, didn't it? I mean, my question is, apart from Back to the Rafters, really, X Factor, lukewarm? Mm-hmm. I would say, considering the investment that they put in, the big flops for them were numerous. The Bounce, The Event, The White Room, Beat the Star, Australia Versus
in particular. Yeah, that wasn't a good format.
So
I expect now we're out of TV rating season, we'll get to see all of these played out now.
So excited.
Something to look forward to. Beat the Star will
be
back.
I keep seeing this damned advert at the moment for some dating show in the dark.
Dating in the Dark on Foxtel, yeah. Do you know, it's... So the idea
I get the idea. The lights are out.
Sorry, Tim, are you on it? You sound very excited about this.
I have been on a date in the dark. I actually have experience.
Well, did she see your face turn the lights off?
At a restaurant.
At a restaurant, yes. Yeah, where you go in, it's dark. The waiters are wearing night vision goggles. you literally can't see anything at all. You can only hear.
How do you eat your? Well, do they hand you your knife and fork and aim at your food?
They give you things that aren't particularly messy to eat. So nothing involving gravy, for instance.
Right, okay.
Oh, my favourite food. Dad.
Yes.
Yeah, and how many people knocked over their glass of wine?
Well, I must admit the whole thing wasn't a great deal of fun. Mainly because, you know, I was a member of the press. And various members of the public were there as well, and they were able to specify whether they wanted to be sat with the press or not. Turned out the person next to me had specified she didn't want to be sat with the press, so that made for an awkward conversation right from the off. But anyway, no, so Foxtel are trying dating there. I think it's an interesting idea. I think it's an interesting format. You sound sceptical.
I just saw the clips. I'm clutching at straws, maybe.
Let me bring in my colleague Brooke, who's producing our podcast today.
Hello, Brooke.
Hi.
And fortunately, we found the right microphone switch for Brooke. Now, Brooke, you've previously made dating programs,
mm-hmm.
And you were also author of the Fairfax column, which was The Sexperts?
No, The Sexperts was the online series, and I wrote a column called Table for 10.
And you also produced...
Is that about orgies? No.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And also produced That's Why You're Single. Your views on Dating in the Dark?
I've actually watched the American version, and it's quite amusing. I'm not sure how they would sustain it over a whole series, because it is quite repetitive, but it's quite interesting.
So I thought it's just people in the dark trying to feel around their weight.
Well, they have a house with three guys and three girls, and they're in completely separate sections of the house, and the only time they ever see each other is in the dark room. So they have a group date where they all come together at first, and then they go on individual dates, and they sort of, based on those dates,
but every date's dark, so you still don't know what the person looks like.
Complete dark. And then at the end, they have a reveal, and they... You stand in the dark room and you are revealed.
So ultimately, if you enjoy the person's company and then they look ugly, they go, oh, and run away.
Well, most of the time, yeah.
You find out how shallow or otherwise people are.
And mostly they are pretty shallow.
I was going to say most people are shallow. I was about to say that. Yeah. Well, why didn't a TV programme tell you that?
It's anyway, the process, isn't it? It's the process. It's the story, the narrative.
Back to television. So your network of the year, Kimmo, you're saying that it would have been Nine.
No, I say SBS.
They had a dreadful year.
I'm saying SBS for
managing. SBS had an awful year.
Because people
enjoyed certain TV shows. One moment, please. I'm saying SBS for still managing to exist even though no one watches it. Could I give them credit for that?
Well, they have. I mean, the reason they've had a bad year is because they've been underfunded. And now we've got the additional digital channels. It's going to happen more and more that every time they get anything that's like a hit, somebody will come in and bid against
them. So really, I mean, it's the question that is constantly asked. How much longer?
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. They're going to be... They finished this year, the fifth network. Next year, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they get overtaken by Nine's digital channel, Go, probably 7-2, and maybe even 11 when 10 launches that. So, you know, by next year, other than the fifth channel, chances are they'll be the eighth channel, you know, which is hard to sort of bring in any sort of revenues to sustain a service. And I suppose the other thing is...
But they're a niche, you know, and they've got...
If SBS were in the room, they would say their job isn't to get ratings, it's about connecting all of Australia and
6 billion
telling
stories
all of Australia's stories. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Who would your network of the year be?
Probably Hulu. Or BBC iPlayer.
Who would your Australian network of the year be?
Probably Hulu or BBC iPlayer. To be honest,
apart from a very small number of techno wankers like you
who
mess about with VPNs and that sort of thing and access these, those are not available to your average Australian consumer.
To be honest, I don't even look at what channel I'm on. I just flick. I've got Foxtel. I flick between what looks like good. That's simple as that.
Yeah, but let me put this to you. You work for Fleischmann Hillard.
Yep.
You are.
I still go through all the channels.
Helping them reach consumers. Consumers Absolutely. Consume television.
Yeah, I do.
Your job is to understand
that
market. Yeah, but
my job is ensuring.
Surely you have to understand digital's place within a wider media market.
Yeah, I do that. But I personally don't really enjoy many of the
why is it okay to admit that and say that?
It's absolutely fine to do that.
Boss of an agency
stood
up and said, well, look, I only watch television, I'm not really interested in the internet, everyone would absolutely deride them as being an idiot.
Why
is it okay that you don't, of the biggest mediums?
I consume digitally. That's my job.
So you have no understanding of traditional...
No, I do have a full understanding of that.
Well, could you not give an objective response to that question?
I'd rather just be honest,
then?
Though. I mean, that's my point. I'd rather be honest and say...
No, if you're speaking to a client and you need to give them an objective response, you can't.
Oh, I can't.
You're sitting there with your arms folded.
No, I always sat my arms folded the whole thing, most of the meeting.
Well, fortunately, we're videoing it, so we can play that back and
have a look. See, most of the time I've got my arms crossed. I don't really, I mean, honestly, I've got, one of the things is, as with Foxtel, it allows me to traipse across loads of channels. I'll sit most of the time on the comedy channel. I'll watch stuff on that.
So you're nominating the comedy channel as your channel of the year? Actually, they're coming out. They've got a nice little stunt, the Jimmy Fallon thing. They're renaming the channel for the day, the Jimmy channel.
I like Sci-Fi Channel. I spend some time on the lifestyle ones and the cooking programs, that kind of stuff. I want to drop onto 7. I watch MasterChef. That's probably one of the ones I did watch. But apart from that, I didn't watch most of the traditional. I watch SBS more than I watch SBS and ABC more than any of the others.
Camille, with your PR hat on now, do you feel duty bound to stay on top of things that maybe you didn't stay on before?
What do you mean?
You know, listen to radio stations you wouldn't listen to before.
Oh, consuming media, but I was doing that anyway as a journalist. So, again, you know, we're all communications professionals, so you're kind of on top of what's happening in the media anyway. You're just viewing it from a different perspective.
Well, that is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to my co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to a friend of the podcast, Camille, thank you very much for coming back.
Thank you, guys.
Production was by Brooke Hemphill. Thank you very much to CBS Interactive for use of their studios. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle pip.